Dr. Brown, director of the Bioeconomy Institute here at Iowa State University, share with our listeners the mission of the institute and the—
Mary, the Bioeconomy Institute has a vision for an emerging low-carbon bioeconomy. This will be accomplished through innovations in agricultural practice, ecosystem stewardship, and bio-based manufacturing. Now, I personally defined a bioeconomy as one that obtains sustainable sources of carbon and energy from agriculture. That includes purposely grown biomass and waste biomass, which are converted into power, fuels, and products required by society. It's not a matter of eliminating carbon. I want to make that clear. We are, after all, carbon-based life forms. When we look at our mission, it is primarily one of research that enables a bioeconomy. It also includes outreach and education. Our research has always been interdisciplinary in nature. Much of the research in the College of Agriculture is focused on sustainable biomass production and ecosystem stewardship, while the fact the engineering college have more emphasized biomass conversion into various products. We frequently have collaborations across colleges where faculty work collaboratively on both production and conversion.
Can you talk about some of those collaborations the Institute has had over the years within this area?
Well, as I mentioned, it tends to be interdisciplinary research, and this often involves multi-institutional collaborations. In doing these, it increases the potential for impact, but it also increases the complexity of preparing research proposals to do the work and administering the work. This is where research centers and institutes are particularly important to fulfilling the research mission of a university. Some specific examples, the U.S. Department of Agriculture sponsors what they call coordinated agricultural projects. They refer to these as CAPs. These CAPs are extremely large. They're supposed to involve multi-institutions, go across many disciplines, and they really want to see an integration of the biomass production and the processing. They want to see it as research. They want an educational element. They want outreach. Over the last decade, the Bioeconomy Institute has been awarded two such CAPs totaling, I think it was $45 million. And these were both led by faculty from the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. Similarly, we've done large projects for industry. An example, the ConocoPhillips Biofuels Program of several years ago, we were selected among several universities for this $20 million program. We were told we were selected over other universities on the breadth and depth of our interdisciplinary collaborations across campus. One of the company representatives observed to me, when they visited campus, they were struck by the fact that our faculty did not have to introduce themselves to each other. Now, that struck me as a strange answer till I thought about it, where they were used to going to universities and seeing faculty all converging for this meeting, and they were introducing themselves to one another because they had never collaborated before.
Those are great examples. And can you talk about this forum and really what it entailed?
I like to talk about carbon removal, something I've been doing for about the last decade. I'd like to start by clarifying the difference between carbon reduction and carbon removal. We were focused specifically on carbon removal. Carbon reduction is the action of reducing the amount of carbon that is emitted into the atmosphere from factories, farms, homes, etc. Carbon removal is the action of actually removing carbon that has already accumulated in the atmosphere. That's a lot harder to do than carbon reduction. And it's considered a very important thing that has to be done. In 2014, the International Panel on Climate Change, known as the IPCC, and also the 2015 Climate Summit in Paris encouraged removal of carbon from the atmosphere as the only way to reach the goal of limiting average global temperature to rise to 1.5 degrees Celsius. I'm going to make an analogy to a bathtub that's filling with water faster than the drain can discharge it. If you can't fully turn off the faucet, you better start bailing to keep the water level below the rim. Society has been so dependent upon burning fossil fuels, which is the source of most net emissions of carbon dioxide, that we're having trouble turning off the faucet, so to speak. And according to the IPCC, carbon dioxide has now reached the rim of the tub, and it's time to start bailing. Carbon removal can be accomplished in several ways. I favor approaches that don't merely remove carbon dioxide, but provide net energy in the process, something I call carbon negative energy. That may sound like a violation of the second law of thermodynamics, and I teach thermodynamics. I want to make clear, no, it isn't a violation of the second law. If you couple it to renewable energy, then it is perfectly feasible. Those are the kinds of things that we're proposing at Iowa State University. As an example, plants remove carbon dioxide through through photosynthesis, and that we all know is powered by sunlight. That's a renewable energy. If these plants are harvested and converted into fuels, you achieve low carbon energy, not carbon negative energy, but low carbon energy. Since the carbon dioxide is cycled between the atmosphere and the biosphere, and you say, well, why isn't it zero carbon? Because we still have a habit of using fossil fuels to do our conversion of biorenewable or even renewable resources. And so there are always going to be some carbon associated with it. We want to look at a scenario where we would actually divert some of the carbon that is cycled by photosynthesis and bioenergy, which is a cycle with the atmosphere and the biosphere, divert some of that cycled carbon into a form that can be sequestered from the atmosphere. If we do that, then the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere begins to decline and you've achieved carbon negative energy.
Related to the forum, what specifically did you want all of us to take away from that and to put forward in our vocations?
For me, it was introducing the audience to the concept of carbon removal and distinguishing it from carbon reduction. That was the most important takeaway. Participant comments suggest that for many, it was actually the first time they had thought about the possibility of not only slowing the flow of carbon, but reversing it. Lisa Schulte Moore, who's Associate Director of the Bioeconomy Institute, and I also hope to engage a wide range of people in thinking about carbon removal.
Tell our listeners about what you have planned for the future.
Well, there's actually a couple of very large items. We hope to conduct a carbon assessment for the state of Iowa, evaluating the potential to reduce climate change impacts in the state, not only from carbon reduction, but carbon removal strategies. And although much of the discussion has been around carbon dioxide as a greenhouse gas, nitrous oxides and methane, both which are emitted from agriculture as well as industrial processes, also play roles in climate change and would be included in such an assessment. The focus of carbon removal is always going to be about carbon dioxide, since it persists in the atmosphere much longer than the other prominent greenhouse gases. You need to accelerate how it would be naturally removed from the atmosphere, whereas the others have a more accelerated removal process.
A great opportunity for students, a sea change and SciBound Scholarship Internship Program. That is a four-year project over summers that can engage students in really empowering them as to their voices, how they can put their energy enthusiasm into carbon reduction and mitigation.
I would say the Sea Change program is this CAP project that I referred to earlier. And we are obviously interested in not just the research, but our opportunities for education, both for students on campus and in the greater community through outreach.
Dr. Brown, how did you end up where you are now? Obviously, you're extremely passionate about it.
Well, I've always been, shall I say, passionate about energy for a long, long time. And as an undergraduate, that led me to study physics. I switched from science to engineering for my graduate studies. I'm motivated to solve problems in energy rather than simply study problems in energy. After I graduated, I worked for 3 years in the aerospace industry, where the problems, though interesting, were a bit tangential to my interest in energy. I joined Iowa State University with the specific goal of I want to build a program in energy. There are some plans for sequestering all the carbon dioxide that's produced, unlike other pollutants, whether it's sulfur emissions or particulate emissions, where you can actually mitigate them by how you build a system. You couldn't do that with carbon dioxide. So that led to my interest in looking at how we could look at low carbon systems. My opportunity to work on those kinds of problems emerged when the Iowa legislator established the Iowa Energy Center in 1990. And my first project, believe it or not, was to establish the potential for bioenergy in the state of Iowa. Surprisingly, it wasn't apparent that this is a great place to do bioenergy. And I was said, prove first that Iowa is a place that we should be doing bioenergy. Once I did that, I collaborated with several faculty, both here at Iowa State University and University of Iowa. And from there, I went on to build my own research program in bioenergy around what's called thermochemical technologies. We use heat and catalysts to transform biomass into energy or other kinds of products. And then about 20 years ago, Iowa State University launched a campus-wide bioeconomy initiative. This was the predecessor to the Bioeconomy Institute. We did that for just a few years, then established the Bioeconomy Institute in 2007. I wanted to teach courses in biorenewable resources and discovered there was no textbook available at the time. I wrote a textbook and I'm still teaching the course out of the second edition of that textbook.
What is your response when people say to you, oh, I don't know, I don't work in the bioeconomy field, and what difference can I really make?
It's real simple. I'm going to go back to the bathtub example. If we turn the faucet down, we're going to make it a lot easier to keep the tub from overflowing. What everybody can contribute is helping turn that faucet down just in your personal lives. And I've heard some critics to that notion of millions of people doing a small thing. It has little impact. Well, if that's true, then I'm going to ask all your listeners and the citizens of the United States to each send me a penny. And that may seem like a small thing, but it would make me a millionaire. I'm a true believer. Every individual in some small way can contribute to bigger things.
Dr. Brown, thank you so much.